This hour of the Jason Rand Show brought to you by Northwest Safe. There's a lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. It's time to find out what's trending.
What's trending at home?
So Democratic state lawmakers have another ludicrous idea that wants to punish the wealthy for their success. Wants to demonize rich people. Wants to blame the wealthy for income inequality in the state of Washington. And they're doing it by directly going after businesses while telling us, oh, this is not, we're not going after businesses. We swear. State Democrats in Olympia are pushing yet another tax. This time, though, they're calling it a tax on wealth inequality, which actually doesn't mean anything. Doesn't mean anything. They're just saying, hey, we've got some income inequality here. We believe everyone should be equal as far as their take-home pay. It's a rather socialist position to take. So we're going to tax something that we don't like. Except specifically what they're doing is taxing companies with employees that make over $1 million. Which, of course, if you earn more than $1 million, to Democrats, you didn't really earn it. I mean, do you really need that much money? Come on, there's other people who are in need. Yes, they're not working as hard as you are. Yes, they're not really putting in the hours that you're putting in. But still, we should give it to them. You're overvalued anyway, man. You're evil. In fact, I guess I can argue, you rich folks, you're responsible for those of us who don't make $1 million or more per year. So, of course, this idea sounds a lot like the head tax, which failed in the city of Seattle. But, of course, State Senator Joe Wynn, who is the Democrat behind this, he's all like, oh, no. This is different.
I mean, you call it whatever you want. It'd be a weird head tax that exempts basically 99.999% of all people in Washington state. This is a tax on wealth inequality, and this is...
No, just real quick. It's a tax on people making $1 million or more. This is not a tax on income inequality. You may be using the tax dollars to go after, in your view, income inequality, even though, by the way, you're not even using the money for that. But this is not a tax on income inequality.
It's not meant to hurt small businesses, not meant to hurt large businesses.
Oh, yeah.
And this is a marginal rate on top of folks who already make over $1 million a year. This is very different than what Seattle did. But this is certainly a way to address some of the regressive nature of our tax structure in Washington state.
Actually, what it's meant to do is hurt individuals who make money, because you are incentivizing businesses to cut those salaries from above $1 million or above $5 million or above $10 million, whatever it happens to be, because different amounts of money require different tax structures. But beyond that, what this is meant to do is steal money from businesses. That's what this is about doing. Now, under this plan, all employers in the state would have to pay this tax, but only on those employees who earn $1 million or more working in the state. According to Joe Wynn's office, he says this accounts for about 3,000 people. Now, he tells our sister station, Cairo Radio, that the tax structure that we have right now in Washington state, that's actually to blame for a lack of funding for basic needs.
When we look at the issues that our state is facing, how we're not funding education enough, how we're not doing enough to address climate change, how we're not doing enough to really shore up basic needs such as our road and transportation, I think largely it comes down to having an unequal tax structure, a very regressive tax structure in Washington state. I wanted to make sure that we had this conversation. I wanted to make sure that this was part of the narrative, because we needed to figure out ways to be more progressive in terms of how we actually address the problems in Washington state.
So the way he talks about Washington state, you would think that we live in shambles. I mean, we can't even provide basic funding for education, although McCleary decision says we have actually done that. We can't even take care of our roads. Our roads are fine. There's some potholes that we can take care of, yes, but usually that's on a city level, not on a state level. The way he talks about it seems to indicate that we haven't just brought in historic amounts of revenue to the state of Washington through taxes. You see, we don't have a revenue problem. I know he wants you to think that. We don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. He is addicted to spending. The Democratic Party is addicted to spending. Now, the good news in all of this bill is not going to pass. The bad news is it can actually inspire activists to put pressure on lawmakers in the future so they can put this on the docket and actually have the possibility of it passing. That's a problem. Which is exactly why we're not going to let that happen. We'll be paying attention. At some point, we may need your help in pushing back. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending on the campaign trail.
So Joe Biden is set to make it official on Wednesday of next week. That, according to Fox News, they have confirmed, as have other outlets like the AP. He is going to announce on Wednesday that he is running for president. He right now, despite having not yet announced, Joe Biden is the front runner, according to most of the polls that are out there. Behind him, Bernie Sanders, either trailing by 5 points or it's neck and neck. And now let's all take a moment right now on this Friday, on this Good Friday, to point out that the Democrats, who love to tell us how woke they are, who love to tell us how progressive they are being led right now by rich old white dudes. I suppose we should throw in that they're straight as well, because that's how the Democrats talk. So congratulations, Democratic Party. You are being led by rich, old, white, straight dudes. And by the way, that person who's coming up from behind, maybe Beto O'Rourke, the rich, straight, white dude who pretends to be Latino.
Disgusting.
It's disturbing is what it is. Now, of course, we've been knowing this is coming for a while. Joe Biden has been hinting at it over the course of the last few weeks.
I am very close to making the decision to stand before you all relatively soon. I think within weeks.
What's the holdup?
Putting everything together, man. Putting everything together. Even if I knew for certain that I was going to run for president back
for
Thanksgiving, my intention from the beginning, if I were to run, would be the last person to announce. So if everybody else today, then I get a shot, and then we're off to the races.
Just to screw up his plans, I'm going to announce I'm running for president the day after he does it. I'm going to steal all of the press. They're going to ditch Joe Biden. They're going to come to Seattle. They're going to see me standing there up on my soapbox and be like, oh, this is the real contender. This is the dark horse right there.
You're going to be running on the Democratic ticket?
Yep. I mean, it's trolling, but I mean, I'm going to run as a Democrat.
But what if you actually win because all the other candidates suck?
Well, then I will single-handedly save the Democratic Party from itself by governing like a Republican.
Gotcha.
So what exactly does this mean? Well, let's talk about this from the perspective of the primaries. So the primary season is already up and running, right? You've got a whole bunch of people who are already out there on the campaign trail. They're going to Iowa and New Hampshire and South Carolina. They're traveling all over the place. Joe Biden is going to potentially have a hard time in the primaries. Certain states. Because he understands that he is running up against a bunch of lunatic fringe members of the Democratic Party. And during the primaries, the lunatic fringes, generally speaking, not always, but generally speaking, have an advantage because during these primary elections, the regular voter, you and me, we tend not to vote. Now, that's a mistake. That's silly. You should all vote. I always vote. But a lot of people, the average person does not vote during the primary. The hardcore activists do, which means those hardcore activists are going to get behind Bernie Sanders and Beto O'Rourke and Buttigieg and all these others, which is going to be long-term a problem for Joe Biden. Now, he might be able to squeak through some of these states, right? When you have 117 people running for president, when you're the biggest name, when you're the most mainstream, you have a little bit easier of a shot. But once it's just him and Bernie Sanders, then it becomes difficult. Now, let's say he wins the primary season, he gets to be the candidate. My assumption is he's going to have the same exact difficult time running against Trump than Hillary Clinton did. Because when I was at that convention, I spoke to the delegates who are Bernie supporters who all said, hey, I am not voting for Hillary Clinton. I don't want a mainstream Democrat. I want the socialist. I want the person who's farther and farther and farther to the left than the people before them. And you know what? Yes, I might even sit this election out or even vote for Donald Trump because I want to disrupt the system so the Democratic Party learns their lesson. Now, that stung Hillary Clinton. She didn't have the activist support that she needed. My assumption is you're going to have the exact same thing with Joe Biden, minus the little bit of a bump that Hillary Clinton got from a lot of people for potentially being the first female president. He's not the first old dude who's straight and white who becomes president. So Trump right now is in a really good position, but it is early, so we'll see how it all figures out. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Don't forget, we are on Twitter. Twitter.com/JasonRantz. Jason Rantz is actually also how you can follow me on Instagram. Just fire up that app, search for the name Jason Rantz. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? At- at the movies.
It is Friday. You know what that means? It means I get to talk movies thanks to our sponsor, Alpine Specialty Cleaning at alpineclean.com. Now, the weekend movies that are out gave me basically two choices, a horror film called The Curse of La Llorona, or a singing competition film called Teen Spirit. Now, I decided to go with that one because I don't like scary movies. But I do have to say, going into Teen Spirit, we know one of two things will happen in a movie like this. The singer will either win against all odds, or the singer will lose but learn really valuable lessons. So when you see a movie where you essentially know the ending, you might actually have no expectations because it's kind of hard to make a film work when you already know the ending. And yet, Teen Spirit does just that. This is a phenomenal movie. It follows a 17-year-old girl. Her name is Violet. She's played beautifully by Elle Fanning. She comes from a tiny spot off of the coast of the United Kingdom, the Isle of Wight. And she auditions for an American Idol-style competition show called Teen Spirit. She does it with the help of a drunken former opera singer she meets at a bar where she's a waitress.
Somebody said you got a new friend.
This round is extremely competitive. You'll be up against some of the best singers in the country.
Does she love you better than I can?
Sing from here.
Mom, mom, mom.
You can do this, Violet. Sing from your heart.
Never dreamed I would make it this far.
Life comes down to these moments, Violet. Don't take them for granted.
Predictably, Violet faces some setbacks on her road to Teen Spirit celebrity, but this movie feels exceptionally original and fresh, due in part to tremendous performances by the actors, but also a really skilled first-time director in Max Minghella. He's an actor probably best known for The Handmaid's Tale or The Social Network, but his father, the late Anthony Minghella, he's actually an Oscar. He was an Oscar-winning director, so clearly Max picked up on a thing or two. Only Teen Spirit is visually stunning in a way that I suspect only a young director could pull off effectively. You see, when Violet performs in this movie, some of the scenes turn into highly stylized music videos. It's almost as if an art house film director took control, and you put that up against some of the contemporary music that they use in this film, it's just mesmerizing. The soundtrack and the grit of parts of this film kind of remind me of the movie Drive with Ryan Gosling. This movie is unusually sweet, the characters unexpectedly deep and really well-rounded. The emotional wallop this film pulls out is unexpected, and it's just a terrific surprise. Every moment of this movie feels like it was well plotted. It's not a very long film. It's just a tad over 90 minutes, and it feels like it uses every single second really effectively. This is an American Idol version of A Star is Born, but I think Teen Spirit plays it much more fun and carefree in a way. I really thought Elle Fanning's performance as the lead here is just absolutely terrific. She really is a standout star in this, and there's a reason why a lot of people are getting excited about her as an actress. She's had some missteps in the film she's picked in the past, but this one is just perfect. Combine that with the director, Max Minghella, this is a huge, huge success. I really, really love Teen Spirit. I highly recommend it. I hope you take the time this weekend to see it and support it in the theater. You're listening to The Jason Rancho. I would love to hear, by the way, what movies you're going to see this weekend. Text me at 1-800-465-8770. That's the Unbetter Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. Text me and tell me what film you're going to see this weekend. And then, of course, on Monday, tell me how much you like the movie you ended up seeing. Right now, let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? Celebrity news.
Cook County prosecutor Kim Fox remains under fire for her mishandling of the Jussie Smollett cases, claiming she recused herself when text messages clearly indicate she definitely did not. Now staff members are fleeing from her office, though the claim coming from her office is that this has really nothing to do with the controversy at all. Joining me on the line with more is Ron Blitzer. He is an attorney, a legal analyst, and he is a senior editor at lawandcrime.com. Ron, thanks for stopping by again. Appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
So Kim Fox just lost two pretty significant staffers, right?
Chief Ethics Officer April Perry and the Chief of the Conviction Integrity Unit, Mark Rotert, they both quit. As you mentioned, the office said that it has nothing to do with what's going on with the Smollett case and the Inspector General's investigation of it. But the timing is definitely curious, to say the least. When you have so much backlash over the office's recent actions involving the Jussie Smollett case and claims or at least allegations of some sort of, if not foul play, at least questionable practices for top aides, including a chief ethics officer, to leave in the middle of this, that does raise some red flags to me.
Yeah, certainly. And obviously, part of the timing is we just got these text messages that indicate when she claimed that she had recused herself from this investigation, it turns out, no, probably not.
Yeah, no, first her office said that Kim Fox was accusing herself of the case, and normally what happens during a recusal is the judge then has the opportunity to appoint a special prosecutor. So that's someone from typically a different jurisdiction who comes in, and then, if Fox had actually recused herself, her office wouldn't be handling the case anymore. But that's not what happened. Instead, she claimed that she just took herself out of it, gave the case to her first assistant and just had the rest of her office deal with it anyway. So that was a little weird when it was like a non-recusal. And then the office's explanation was that when they said recusal, they didn't mean that in the quote-unquote legal sense. They meant it colloquially, which to me is really strange because if you're tossing around legal words, I would imagine that you're meaning them in the legal sense, but, I guess they didn't. But then, as you mentioned, you have these text messages coming out that show that she didn't even recuse herself in the colloquial sense.
Exactly.
She was still messaging, her employees about it, talking about the case, even admitting, so I know I'm recused, but, and, trying to, say things in kind of general terms, saying how she would generally handle a case like this, but we know what she was getting at. She was talking about how 16 felony counts, is excessive and how the case should be handled differently. And, for her to be, giving her input for this case when she's not supposed to have anything to do with it, is, in my opinion, not a good thing.
Well, yeah, and it's the influence on the investigation and dropping the charges when she's supposed to have none. And when your boss or anyone in a position of power is kind of hinting at the fact that, I don't know if this makes sense, of course you're going to feel like you're in a position to have to listen to what it is they're telling you.
Exactly.
So there's this investigation that's happening right now. It's being done by the Inspector General. Is this something that could actually come with any kind of punishment, or is this just we're looking into what's going on and we're going to tell you what happened behind the scenes?
I think it's more going to be along the lines of, taking a look at what happened behind the scenes, and then, Inspector General reports, will usually make some recommendations about what should happen going forward. But I would be surprised if this resulted directly in any kind of action. Should the higher ups in the mayor's office, feel otherwise, then we'll see what happens. But, I don't expect much to come of this.
Well, it does seem to be that Mayor Rahm Emanuel in Chicago is not a fan of hers.
No, he's not, but he's also not going to be in office much longer. They recently had an election, and he's on his way out the door. So, even if he would like something to happen, I don't think he'll be in a position to do anything about it once the time actually comes.
Is this story as popular in Chicago as it seems to be nationwide? Are they really talking about this there?
We have this story that was, that we're talking about with the top aides leaving. That's coming from NBC Chicago. So, this is something that's of interest. It's something that directly affected the community in Chicago. You had Jussie Smollett claim that he was the victim of a horrible hate crime, and, something that, really affects the character of the neighborhood there. And then you have police coming out and saying, no, that's not what happened. He made this up. So, if you're making allegations of something that, gives, the you know, that location a bad name, and then it turns out that maybe it wasn't really true,
yeah,
then, yeah, you know, I would imagine the people would be pretty upset about it.
Well, certainly filled with some drama. If you want to read more about the ongoing case and this controversy out of Kim Fox's office, go to lawandcrime.com. We've been talking with Ron Blitzer. He is the senior editor of Law and Crime. Thank you so much again, Ron, for coming on. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show, 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show, live on this Friday. Thank you so much for tuning in. Thank you so much for listening to us in the office right now when there's just like 2 hours left in the day on a Friday. You're like, I just want to go home. I don't feel that way at all, ever, on a Friday, even when both myself and producer Tom are both coming down with some sort of cold, which has been going through the building. But I'm happy to be here.
I don't have a voice.
Which, to be fair, is a mitzvah for this station and the show.
Disagree.
To be fair, your opinion doesn't count. Just throwing that out. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text message on the NumBetter Tax Resolution Hotline. 1-800-465-8770. An initiative needlessly bringing affirmative action back to Washington State, or at least trying to, is actually now up for discussion in Olympia. It's being pushed by a man who once called a black cop an Uncle Tom after he was arrested for driving a car that was reported stolen, then resisting arrest, and then putting his hand on the gun belt of one of the cops.
What are you seeing? What a UT. Okay. You can call me an Uncle Tom.
I didn't call you an Uncle Tom.
I did not.
Okay, UT doesn't mean Uncle Tom, right?
No.
Okay, I'm stupid. I'll be stupid.
No, I think you're a little sensitive.
No, he's not sensitive. You're an idiot. That person, that voice, is former Washington State Representative Jesse Wineberry. Emphasis on the wine. Because this is a guy who whines a lot. This is a guy who always thinks he's a victim. And as a result, he always thinks everybody is a victim. Which is exactly why he's trying to push affirmative action in this state yet again.
Our goal is to enable the people to speak once again 20 years later, now with greater knowledge of what affirmative action is and that it's not preferential treatment, and also to see the effects of the old law.
Yeah, so that's him talking with King Five. And let's be very clear about something. It is 100% about preferential treatment, and it implies that it somehow now is necessary. 20 years ago, when we decided to get rid of this in the state of Washington, we're now 20 years since that. He's saying now it's necessary. Things have never been better for people overall. Things have never, ever been better, not just in Washington State, but in this entire country. When it comes to race relations, when it comes to fighting bigotry in general, things have never been better. This would be regressing back to old times. Now, King Five says the initiative, which, by the way, is Initiative 1000, it would allow the state to use hiring and recruitment goals, but not quotas, to bring minority candidates into state jobs, education, contracting, and on top of that, it would loosen restrictions that were enacted in a separate initiative that was back from 1998 that banned government discrimination or preferential treatment based on factors like race or gender. Okay, so remember, he says this is not based, it is not based on preferential treatment. And yet, under this bill, under this initiative, it would loosen restrictions banning government discrimination or preferential treatment. So he, first of all, is a liar. He's a liar. And he pushes this. He pushes it and pushes it and pushes it. And listen to the way in which he makes his case. Because he said he benefited personally from affirmative action when he went to Queen Anne High School when he was a kid.
That was when they could recruit to achieve the racial and gender diversity that the University of Washington did not have. They still don't have it. But now, for the last 20 years, their hands have been tied.
Okay, so listen to that. He said, back when you could do this legally, it was about achieving diversity. But he just said it wasn't about quotas. I thought, well, you're not supposed to have quotas in this. All of this is about quotas. To suggest that this isn't about quotas, that is ridiculous. If you say workforce diversity or school diversity or blah, blah, blah is a problem, whatever kind of diversity or lack thereof is an issue, is a problem, it's because you're looking at the ratio of white kids to black kids, right? So if you look at Queen Anne High School or any high school, from Spanaway to Everett, to Linwood, to Clinton, anywhere in between. If you look at that and you say, okay, there are a lot of white kids. In fact, there are 97% white kids. There's only 3% communities of color. So you're saying, okay, that's a problem. So how do you address that? Well, you have to have a quota. You have to change that ratio. Presumably, you have some kind of bar on what you would consider an improvement, correct? You would want to go say, you know what, 97 to 3, that's not good. We want to get to 60-40. Okay, well, then your 40% is a quota. That's literally a quota. And let's be clear about something. This is not about equality. This is not about equality at all. This is about equal outcome. Equal outcome is different than equality. Equality is having equal access to, for example, Queen Anne High School. Everyone who lives within the district has equal access to Queen Anne High School. Everyone within the district. Where did you go to high school again, producer Tom?
Thomas Jefferson.
You're a Viking? No. What was that? What
the... Close, kinda.
Raider. Okay, there you go. Where'd you go? Because I wasn't paying attention.
Thomas Jefferson.
There you go.
The president.
Everyone has access who lives in the district to go to producer Tom's high school. Now, equal outcome is different. What they're saying is they want everyone who applies to get in. That's what they're saying. Now, of course, when we're talking about private schools, when we're talking about government jobs, it gets a little bit confusing, right? Unless you have a quota, then it makes it really easy. Then they give you preferential treatment, which then, of course, means someone is not going to get a job that otherwise they would have received because they were best suited. Now, of course, when we have this conversation, it usually delves into blaming institutionalized racism. They never actually name the people who are responsible for the institutionalized racism that we currently have, it according to them, right? They never specifically call out the company, not really, the people who claim institutionalized racism is there, because it doesn't actually exist. What makes their argument easier is to say there's this mythical object out there, this mythical belief system, this mythical institution that pushes on us racism and sexism and homophobia and transphobia and all these other things. You just can't see it. But I have a way to change the institution. I have a way to change the system by instituting within the system another mechanism to fight back. So you're telling me the answer to getting rid of institutionalized racism is to turn back to the same institutions, the government, to get rid of it, huh? Why would you trust the system to fix it? If this is not about an individual person or a company, because if it was about an individual person, I could say, okay, Tom, you're the one who's responsible for all this. Okay, well, then I'm going to get rid of Tom, or I will educate Tom, preferably the first part. That's easy. That's a fix. When you identify an individual company, let's just go with Amazon. Amazon is filled with racism. Okay, well, now we can focus our attention specifically on Amazon. That's easy. But that doesn't change any ideology. That's what this is about. This is about pushing ideology, right? This is about pushing ideology. And the only way you can push ideology is when you pretend that there is this mythical thing out there that's causing all of this. So let's go after the mythical thing. And by the way, by pursuing my ideological agenda here, I never actually have to show you that that mythical institutionalized racism or sexism or whateverism isn't gone. In fact, I can make an argument, oh, it's still there despite our best efforts. So give me some more power so I can push an additional bit of ideology down your throat. That's all that this is about. This is a scam. It is unnecessary. Now, this eventually will get to the voters. And then you're going to see a whole bunch of people, primarily in the Seattle area, pretending, oh, racism is rampant. Oh, racism is out of control. It is, of course, not. The data does not back up their claims. The data almost never backs up the claim of a fringe activist on either side. Because these are ideologues. Ideologues are blind to the truth. Ideologues don't do research. Ideologues who do research, selective in their research, cherry pick their research so they can try to make their claims. And then they ignore you when you point out that they cherry pick their research. Or they call you a liar when you call them out as one. Or, and this is my favorite one, you question them, they automatically say, oh, you're questioning me? So you're in favor of discrimination against black and brown people? That's not what. Oh, but then why aren't you on my side? Because your side is ridiculous. That's why. 1-800-465-8770 if you want to send me a text on the None Better Tax Resolution Hotline. While you're at it, please give us a like on Facebook, facebook.com/Jason Rantz Show. If you go there, hit the like button, you get to go behind the scenes of the show. You get to participate in conversations with other listeners about all of these topics that we're talking about. And I think this part is fun. You can see videos and images of what it is we look like and what our studio is like. We take you behind the scenes. It's a lot of fun. Facebook.com/JasonRantsShow. Welcome back to the Jason Rantz Show. When it comes to the Mueller report, the investigation, the whole bit of nonsense that we've dealt with over the course of the last 2 years, we've seen nothing but hypocrisy and a lot of patting on each other's backs. It's rather ridiculous. It's rather ridiculous. And let's start at least with some of the hypocrisy in all of it. Because there were some folks on the left who were mad that the presidential team got access to the report before it was released, which makes total sense because they needed to see whether or not they would assert executive privilege, which they did not do, which is an important part of all of this. They could have exerted some form of executive privilege, but they chose not to do that. Now, apparently that's outrageous. I can't believe it. Nancy Pelosi is outraged. Except back in 1998, Nancy Pelosi said at the time that then President Bill Clinton should have seen the Star Report before it was put out. And I think that that kind of hypocrisy needs to be pointed out.
To you, Mr. Speaker, why would you not afford the President of the United States the same opportunity that you were given by the Ethics Committee of having almost a week's advance notice to review the charges against you, and so that you could have your response be part of the report?
See, that was when she was able to clearly communicate when she wasn't 322 years old. But let's be clear about something, because this entire process, the way that it came down, with Bill Barr having access to it first and then figuring out what needs to be redacted, that system was put in place because of the Democrats upset with how the Ken Starr investigation was handled. What we saw this week and over the course of the last few weeks, as far as Bill Barr, the Attorney General, reviewing the Mueller report, this was done because of Democrats, because they were upset when Bill Clinton was going through virtually the same kind of mechanism. But now all of a sudden, they want you to forget that because they think we don't have access to YouTube. They want you to think that this is just a brand new... Oh my gosh, I can't believe they did it this way. Now at the same time, you've got a bunch of people in the media pretending that they're all heroes. Oh, they're so heroic how they decided to handle the Mueller investigation. Yes, of course, they led with all of these rumors. Yes, of course, they gave a lot of airtime unchallenged to people like Eric Swalwell or Adam Schiff, who still says he has access. He's seen the evidence that shows conclusively there was some form of collusion. I'm not going to show you any of the evidence, of course. You had Savannah Guthrie on NBC. She just, the media's so great.
It's not an easy story.
No, not at all. Lester and I were doing our coverage, and we have, I think, you know, the greatest team of correspondents and analysts, but I can't imagine that we'll ever do anything harder than that. Mm-hmm. Even I mean, I remember watching as a viewer. I was in law school at the time, actually, Bush v. Gore, and I remember seeing Pete Williams out in front of the court having to read a Supreme Court decision live, and I thought that has got to be as hard as it possibly could be.
Oh, it's so difficult. How are we ever able to? It's so good. All of you guys out there, you should give us big kudos, man. Please tweet at me the kudos. Because, oh my gosh, it was hard work.
This was harder.
I had to read stuff. What I love about people on TV especially, unlike for the most part in radio, the folks on TV have a crew of dozens of people, sometimes dozens and dozens of people doing all the work for them, and then typing it into a script and then putting it up on the screen for them when we're talking about this kind of coverage, okay? That's what they generally have. Unlike in radio, which we're all doing it in real time. I mean, I have a staff of 2.5 dozen, but still, and I have 14 interns. But to be fair, I have so many interns because so many of them quit in tears.
Because the sheer volume, obviously, the substance of the report is incredibly complicated. It just descended on us with a literal thud on our desk.
It wasn't a literal thud. You never even seen it. Come on. You think Savannah Guthrie or any of these anchors read the full 400 and something page report? There are a few people in the media who I legitimately think would read through it and read it. I think Tucker Carlson, because I like him and he's a smart dude. I think you've got, frankly, I think Rachel Maddow probably read the whole thing because she's always got that look on her face of, I'd like to read a book. Not because she actually enjoys any of it. She just wants to be able to tell people, I read a book a week. Like, that's just her attitude. But this is ridiculous. This is just utterly ridiculous. You're not supposed to get kudos, by the way, for doing your job, and you didn't even do your job. You guys filled the airwaves with rumor. How many times did the media in general have to walk back a story? How many times? How many times did CNN or MSNBC or the New York Times or whomever, BuzzFeed, how many times did they put out breaking news, bombshell report? And then it turned out that it was false. Some people lost their jobs over it. Others just said, oh, well, my bad. And then we all forgot. Why would you congratulate yourself for doing your job well when you didn't even do your job? And by the way, let's assume all the reporting was perfect. Let's just live in that fantasy world. It's easy for us to live in that world because everything we do here on the Jason Rand Show is perfect. But let's just live in the world in which MSNBC and NBC News, they all did everything perfect. That's your job. That's your job. When I get off the air after 3 hours, or when I get off the air on a Friday after 15 hours, I don't go out into our lobby and say, where's my boss? Give me a kudos. Didn't I do a good job? I did my show today. Well, yeah, that's what we pay you to do, right? Yeah, but I did it. No, I pay you for that, right? Well, yeah, but I did it. I don't know what you want from me. Kudos? That was hard. Like, okay. 1-800-465-8770. 1-800-465-8770. No matter tax resolution hotline. It is the Jason Rand Show.